I've lived in New Jersey my entire life, and I've been involved in lots of arts. Acting, writing, I even married a musician. But a lot of people don't think New Jersey is known for arts and culture. Well, they're wrong. And my goal is to introduce everyone to the most talented people I know. They're singers, they're writers, they're musicians, they're actors, they're chefs, they're martial artists, they're everything you can imagine, and they're going to be on my show. Every one of them. Well, maybe not every one of them, but a lot of them. So they're in New Jersey, and maybe they're not so famous, but maybe they should be. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey. My guest today is Tony Piccioni, also known as DJ Tony Vito. Obviously, he's a DJ. Tony DJs in clubs, at parties, and even on the Bradley Beach Boardwalk, where he is currently hosting dance events for both hustle and salsa. As a biracial man who is both Black and Italian, and often mistaken for Hispanic, he has an interesting perspective on race and racism. Tony and I also talk about the weird phenomenon, at least for us, that people almost never dance in clubs anymore. Why is that? As former dance partners back in the hustle days, this is something that's perplexing to the both of us. And we also talk about what it is that DJs have to think about before a gig and during a gig, especially when something unexpected happens. Hello, Tony.
Hi, Lucille.
Well, I'm going to jump right in. You have always had a love for music, so it's no surprise that you became a DJ. But most people think that being a DJ just means that you play one song after another. What unique skills does someone need to have to be a successful DJ?
I'm glad you asked that. One of the things about being a DJ, you have to read the crowd. You have to see who's in the room. Do you have dancers? Do you have people who are just listening? Do you have talkers? And you kind of gear to who's in the room, what race they are, what ethnicity, their age. And you kind of gear to that. Also to the time of day. Early evenings, you don't play the same things that you're playing at, 11:30, 12:30 at night.
So back in the old days, DJs were limited to records or CDs that they had on hand. How much of a difference does it make that you can now download virtually any song for a gig?
Of course, in the old days, DJs had to lug around the hottest records that they thought they would need to play.
How often are you simply not able to find the song someone's insisting that you play? And how do you handle that?
These days, even with technology and how sharp and fast it is, DJs still look down upon requests. However, that's not the way I operate. I take requests and I'll go right online and download a song, maybe listen to it in my earphones for a few beats, and then put it on if it fits.
Okay, you're DJing a party, and the host very specifically tells you what song she does not want you to play, like the chicken dance or whatever. But a very insistent party guest keeps demanding that song. What happens in that situation?
Yep. I go back to the client, whoever's writing the check, and I let them know. Right away, they'll give me the answer right there, and mm-hmm. That's the answer that goes.
So what kind of contentious events have you ever had to deal with as a DJ?
A perfect example is a wedding that I did a few years ago. It was a gay wedding. Two young ladies were getting married. Someone else had the gig. They couldn't do it. They gave it to me. And I hadn't done a gay wedding before that. And when it came time to announce the bride is going to dance with her father, and then I said the groom is going to dance with her, they screamed from the middle of the floor, "There's no fucking groom here." Talk about embarrassment. But, I let it bounce right off me. I just corrected it and kept on rolling.
Yeah. Now, of course, I love to dance because you and I used to be dance partners back in the disco
era. That's right.
That was when the hustle was big and people danced with partners. So how does today's dancing differ from back in the early 80s? And what are some of the things that never change?
It was a surprise to me when I had a residency at a tavern in Asbury Park, Neptune area. And I was playing good music. Everyone was moving, quote unquote. But there were no people dancing with each other at all on any night. Everyone just seemed to be dancing with the air.
Mm-hmm.
So there, I didn't see any couple dancing at all.
Even as far back as, I'd say, the early 2000s, at the headliner, I worked at a radio station. We had an event going on. And people were just like kind of dancing. It's like, what is this? Like, nobody was, dancing with each other. Now, I've gone out in the dance floor and danced by myself because if I don't have somebody to dance with, I don't care. I'm just going to get up and dance,
Right.
But now I don't look weird.
Right. And I'm the same way.
What makes you decide to play a particular song during one of your sets? Is there a criteria other than pure subjectivity when you're selecting what you're going to play at a gig?
I like to play mostly what I like to hear. And I'm someone that likes to dance, so I'm going to angle more to hot tunes or club bangers that are dance tunes. Some songs may not actually sound like dance tunes because the dances are different these days as well. Some of the songs are slower, very slow tempo. Mm. Not something that I would typically play when I was a little younger, but I go ahead and play those anyway. I try to keep it more on a dance level.
Mm-hmm. Back in the disco era when we used to club together, the art of DJing really changed. It wasn't just about putting one record after another, but the skill of being able to mix one song to the next. How did that whole process start?
Well, you know, when I was first started going to clubs, I didn't know a lot about how the professional DJs were doing it. About 77, I saw some professional DJs had a contraption. The lights were blinking, and they could synchronize the two lights together, and then they know that the records were in sync.
Yeah.
And then they could slide from one record to
the next. It used to be a real skill.
Yes.
And then it became just a technology.
Little by little, technology, you know, edged its way in.
Some people say that being a DJ is a craft, and some people call it an art. Which do you think it is?
It's kind of a thin line, but I have to say, it is a craft. The DJ is listening, he's choosing songs that he kind of likes and that he knows gets a good response, and he goes for it. When I'm downloading songs for a gig, I'm downloading a lot of different songs, and some of them I'm thinking, oh, this is, I would never play this song, you know? I'm going to download it in case someone asks me for it, but this is not something I'm going to ever play again, you know? I have it in my arsenal just in case.
How have you been able to combine your love of dance with DJing?
While I'm actually DJing, I am actually sometimes dancing as well behind my booth. I don't let everyone know that all these songs are because I love them too.
Yeah. You know? So what is your favorite genre? What are your favorite genres?
R&B is really my favorite genre. And I have to say 80s, you know, mid-80s to mid-90s R&B was like the best. I mean, I can always say about the 70s as well because I love that as well.
So what about funk?
Funk is always right there. I'm always listening to funk.
Now, the relationship between the audience and the DJ is really important, and yet the connection can also be fragile. How do you see the balance of giving the crowd what they want versus treating them to something new?
I try to give the crowd what I think that they're going to like. And sometimes it's hard to tell unless, you know, you see nobody dancing or someone actually comes up to you and says, hey, can you play more of this? And that happens. A recent gig, I downloaded the latest music for the kids. It was a young party. I was playing the music. It looks like they enjoyed it a little bit. But they came up and said, can we have more dance music? They wanted music that was about 12, 13 years old.
Yeah. You know? Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson.
Prince,
But even some of the newer stuff like Rihanna and stuff. But older hits, 10 years old, you know.
Older,
huh? Yeah. That would be like new music. But for them, if they're 16.
So what makes a strong transition from one track to the next from your point of view? And how do you see the relative importance of establishing a flow versus creating tension through suspenseful breaks and continuity?
The whole thing about being a DJ is the transition. This song has to meld perfectly into the next song. Otherwise, you're not a good DJ. And I get that point. However, I come from a time the beats didn't have to match from one song to the next. Whether the beat melds or not, yes, it's important these days. They're looking for that. Someone in the crowd is going to say, oh, he's not a good DJ. It wasn't a perfect transition.
Yeah.
But really, it's about the dance. And if you have a dancing crowd, they'll dance regardless if the beat didn't match. And what I'm finding a lot now, and other DJs will probably agree with me, nobody will get up unless you play a line dance song. And nobody wants to hear that. Everyone's, oh, I don't want to hear that. But, you know, a quarter of the crowd will get up and dance, and then people will follow.
What ways do you try to create an experience for your audience that's more than just stringing together some great songs?
I try to build up a suspense sort of to a pinnacle and then kind of let it go down towards the end of the night. And sometimes the manager of the club will actually tell you to do that. You know, they'll say, hey, as it gets toward the end, try to wind it down a little bit so that they don't leave here all wound up.
Of course, you can be DJ and just set up your laptop with your set list and let it go. And that has given technology a bad name. But without technology, it would be hard to be a DJ in the first place. So what do you think is the relationship and the balance between technology and the art of DJing?
Well, nowadays, DJs, like you mentioned, they set up their laptop. Then they have a controller, a console that they have in front of them that has two turntables. And you can play a song on one and a song on the other if they're not matching beats. they can just hit a button called the sync button.
Right.
And the two songs will come into sync. But a lot of DJs are getting flack because they're using the sync key to do automate it instead of actually manually making the beats match.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of tension about that, a lot of mention online about it, and a lot of arguing about that. Even though they may put it down and say they don't use it, I'm pretty sure behind the scenes, they're hitting the sync button to make the... I mean, if you have it...
Do you use a sync button?
Now and then I use the sync button, of course. Why would I make the job easier?
It has to be different when you're playing to an all-white millennial audience versus an all-white audience over the age of 60 versus a young black audience or a boomer one. So how do you take these cultural differences into consideration?
When I see different age groups, I try to play a little for each of them. If I see boomer type age, I'm going to play some later disco. If I'm checking out the crowd and there's younger people in there, when I say younger, I mean in their 20s, I got to play 90s stuff. And then some of the, if there's a young crowd, I might play some of the latest stuff, which I might not be that familiar with, to be honest. I think some DJs don't play any of the newest stuff.
So how would you describe club music?
These days, club music is very fast, and it's mostly dance and what they might call EDM, electronic music.
Not a lot of changes.
Not a lot of changes. A fast beat, 128 to 132 beats per minute. It's faster than house music. House music is actually a little slower.
Mm-hmm. So some DJs write and produce their own tracks. Have you done this?
I've done a few songs, but every time I try to do a song, it comes out sounding like an 80s song. And the same if I rap. I know how to rap, but if I rap, it sounds like an 80s rap.
It sounds like hip hop.
Exactly. Hip-hop. So that would be the formula. So my kids will immediately say, "Dad, that sounds like an older rap." There's a whole new style and a new syntax.
Yeah.
And the kids are going to pick that out immediately.
A different rhythm. Yeah, a different rhythm to it. Yeah.
So I made a few songs, but they sound like 80s dance music. Yeah.
What is your personal branding to make you stand out from the crowd?
Anyone who's hired me as a DJ will know, and they'll remember that I DJed there because they'll remember that I came out from behind the booth and I led in the dancing, whether it's line dances or even just freestyle dances. Yeah. I'll put on a song that's going to make me dance and I'll be out on the floor dancing. It's like, oh, the DJ's dancing, and everyone's got their cameras out.
Yeah.
And it becomes a ridiculous event.
Yeah.
You know, and then I go back behind the booth. Yeah. They're going to remember that.
How easy was it for you to deal with the whole mask wearing when you were DJing?
I mean, I was able to do it. I got used to it. It feels awkward. You might take it off. But the last gig that I did, it was for a 70th birthday party. I didn't wear a mask. And that was on a Saturday night. By Wednesday, I was coughing. And I knew right away I got caught slipping.
So are there unwritten rules about DJing? And if so, what are they?
It's understood that you don't let the music stop, even though I'll be the first one to go against that and say, hey, what's the big deal? The music stopped for a moment, just like if you were playing 45s, put the next song on, continue dancing. Also, if there's kids around, you're not going to play music that has questionable lyrics. You try not to, even though these days all the songs have questionable lyrics. Also, especially if you're playing at parties and things, you don't want to raid the food table and the drink table. You kind of stay away from that.
Name three records that have influenced your life musically and tell me why.
I got to go start off with James Brown. Always liked James Brown. And when I was young, I played Say Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud. Oh. You know, my father probably was looking at me a little strange because he's Italian. That was a soul record that shaped what I was going into. Going on from there, I'm going to have to say some Blood, Sweat, and Tears tunes. That was a big part of my early life. Mm. So I love the Blood, Sweat, and Tears and the sax player, Fred. He's my father's best friend.
Ah.
And then later on, I'm going to have to say Robin S., Show Me Love. It's a song that every DJ plays. Everybody likes that song, and it gets the people up right away. Yeah.
So where do you see yourself heading next?
COVID put kind of a curve in all of this. It kind of threw everyone for a curve. Right during that time, I started and I invented a thing for DJs to use, my Firelight panel. So it's a panel that goes on the back of your laptop. And it has your logo or your name.
So basically the cover of your laptop becomes a display.
A display, an advertisement. So if you're playing at a gig, nobody knows your DJ name. Nobody knows. Only person that knows your name is the person that hired you.
Yeah.
But if you have your logo or your marketing material on the back of your laptop showing, you're going to get some gigs from that. So I started doing that, and it took the place of getting more gigs.
Yeah. So, you know, most people think that the DJ world is a man's world, but your daughter and niece is a pretty successful DJ. How different is it for her than for you? Does she get harassed by any of the guests?
No, that has not been
because she's a beautiful girl.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. She hasn't been hassled. I do have some female DJ friends who are gay. they've been hassled, you know, in trying to get the gig, showing up for an interview, because typically before you take a gig, you want to talk to the client, sometimes face-to-face at a coffee shop. They might adopt the attitude of like, you're the DJ? And you immediately know that what they're talking about. They were expecting a guy, you know.
Yeah. What was that club on 35 in Neptune? Black Club?
It was the Redwood Lounge.
Redwood. Yeah. Redwood. Is that still there?
It's not still there. Oh. That's the Redwood Nursery now. No, it's not named Redwood anymore. It's a nursery school, I think.
Yeah.
I used to frequent Redwood.
I used to go there with my girlfriend Pam. We used to go there all the time.
I remember, and I also used to go to the Orchid Lounge.
Orchid Lounge.
Yeah. I mean, I really used to like the Orchid Lounge.
One time, I was there. I'm the only white person in the whole club. And these women are like, you know, I could tell they're talking about me.
Right, side eye.
Yeah. But then Mark and I started to dance, and all of a sudden... Oh, okay, she can dance.
Right.
She's okay.
Yeah. Oh, you got a pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got, a ticket to the cookout.
And I think that's the difference between black and white crowds.
Yeah.
Black crowds are much more accepting.
Oh, absolutely. I've been to clubs, and I remember several times, if you were a guy, I don't know if this happened with girls, but if you were a guy and you were dancing well, you would get some jealous guys, and they might throw stuff at you, and it's happened.
Yeah.
And it was always seemed to be Italian guys that would be the first to do that. They get jealous. It happened in Long Island. It happened in New Rochelle. That was just one of the things. And you had to be careful around
that. Yeah, yeah. Now, that brings me to my last question. As a mixed race person, because obviously, well, maybe not obviously, but you're half black.
That's right. Somebody, my supervisor was just shocked to hear that the other day.
Really?
In a Zoom call. Okay.
So you're passing. No. Yes. So anyway, there may have been times when people who didn't know that you were half black made some disparaging racist remarks. How often has this happened and how did you handle it?
That hasn't been a big part of my experience. Typically, I can sometimes see when I'm setting up, they're looking at me like, okay, this is a Puerto Rican guy. You know, who got the Puerto Rican DJ for a black party? Why, you know, what are you thinking? This guy must be badass because he better come with it, you know? Mm-hmm. We're here to dance. What is he going to put on, you know?
Well, I'm thinking more about a white crowd.
No, I haven't gotten that from them, and I've done a lot of white parties. I think that they would be kind of energized, like, oh
we are cool. Black
we
DJ.
Got a black DJ play our party. You know? It has its pluses, does supposed to have some minuses. It does, I suppose. Yeah. You know, are you fully adopted and embraced by your culture or, you know, by the other half?
Yeah.
You have to make it. If you're a social person, you know, like I was always very good
right.
that way.
Yeah.
You can let that rolls off your shoulder and you can manage it.
I've had situations where people have made racist remarks around me. And my response is usually, oh, you didn't know I'm half black?
Absolutely.
You want to see somebody like...
Oh.
Blood run out of their face.
Yeah. Blood draining out.
Of course, I'm not, but it works anyway.
Oh, yeah. This is a, you know, and it's still an issue. My kids get it. They have friends who will interject. They're out, they're at a social event or something, and my daughter's talking to someone, and someone might ask my daughter, so what are you? Right away, her friend's something. She's black. That's cringeworthy. You're like, you want to do me a favor? Just shut up and let me handle this.
You know,
let that be my thing.
Yeah.
You want to be the cool one because you know that?
I mean, I have a black friend, yeah.
Kids, if they haven't bumped into that before, they actually need a little coaching on what to do in that situation.
Yeah, yeah. You
know, it can be a big deal, even in business. My sister, who's white color with blue eyes.
Yeah.
She's the executive director of higher education in Colorado. So when she's at all of these meetings and these big venues and places where they're having keynote speakers and stuff, she's representing the black race. And she's standing at the podium, and for all intents and purposes, she looks white. And everyone else in the, you know, the assembly or wherever they're at is black. It's a little bit awkward.
Yeah.
You know, everyone wants to think that it's not, oh, it's okay, they know that you're black. No, but there's still a little part of it that's awkward. And we all know it. Sometimes we don't want to recognize it or acknowledge it, but it's there. There's even kind of like a little bit of a caste system in the black community.
Oh, sure. If you're light, you're all right.
Right.
If you're brown, stick around. If you're black, get back. Yeah.
And it's okay, and it's tongue-in-cheek, and we can laugh about it,
but it works. And, you know, a lot of white people don't realize that.
It's funny you mention that because, you know, they just came out with the Tina Turner doll, and it does look like her. However, it's tan. And so, you know, there's some memes out right now that have the Tina Turner doll and Tina there, the real one, And it's a big obvious difference. And it's like the CEO probably said, okay, if we make this too dark, we're going to lose 15 million people who want to buy this. Let's make it lighter.
Oh, come on. Yeah. You know? Well, what about the whole Little Mermaid thing?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It's a fictional character.
Oh, it's incredible.
You know, I am going to give you one more question. You must have had some pretty bad experiences with all the DJ gigs that you've done. Tell me about the very worst one.
I was thinking about that a little earlier. This is how it went down. I had a gig, and it was a white gig. Some feedback started the microphone. It started to make a loud noise at full blast. And I was like, oh, this is terrible. There was nothing you could do to stop it except turn off your system, which means turn off the music, and then start it again.
Yeah.
I took the risk again. I played another gig. Towards the middle of the gig, my sound system started doing it again. A complete noise like a train at full blast, and it was some type of feedback. The only way to stop it was turn off the music. So people are on the dance floor dancing, shut the music off. 5 seconds go, turn it back on, get the music going. Okay, they've already left the floor. 15, 20 minutes later, same thing. They're up on the dance floor. Shut it down. And I told the bride and groom, I said, hey, you know what? We're gonna have to end this early because every 15 minutes this is happening.
Yeah.
And of course, by that time, some of the guys, they're starting to get a little raucous about this and calling out. Come to find out there was a short in my mixer. That was a horrible feeling, you know? Yeah. Shutting down the music every 15 minutes.
Did you give her a discount?
Gave her a discount.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I think I gave them $600 back or something.
Yeah, yeah. That makes it easier.
Yeah, made it easier for them.
Well, Tony, thank you. Thank you for coming.
I'm honored. I'm glad to be here. Absolutely.
Okay. I love the arts, and I love to talk, and that's why I'm talking to local artists. And if you like listening, then subscribe to my podcast. You can do it on this page, on iTunes, or anywhere you get podcasts. I'm Lucille Sapio, and this is Not So Famous in New Jersey.